Welcome in to Locked On Knicks. Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw here, and we have a big preview for you guys today. One of our final season previews. We've been doing all the individual players on the roster. We're almost to the finish line, and no better player to save for right towards the end than Julius Randle, obviously the breakout star of last season's breakout Knicks. Gavin, what are we going to talk about with Julius today?
Well, we're going to get into the full depth of the statistics that defined such an incredible season for Randle. We are going to talk about how his skills will be accentuated with the new talent around him. And we're going to predict what constitutes a successful season for Julius Randle in 2021-2022. All that and more right now on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts without a five. Ewing for the win. Yes.
Thompson cuts left. Now fires a three.
And he's good. And he's fouled. It counts. And he makes it.
Anthony for three.
All right, welcome in to Locked On Knicks. We just wanted to thank you all for always making us your first listen. And if you want to listen to something as your second listen today, be sure to check out maybe Locked On NBA. I keep pumping it up because honestly, that's probably the best place to listen to all this Kyrie Irving stuff, which has been entertaining as a Knicks fan. Maybe you could also check out Locked On Nets just for a laugh too. Not to say that the guys that that hosted over there, Adam and Doug, they're great guys. So they're fun to listen to. But the overall Kyrie discourse right now has been very fun as a Knicks fan. Anyway, I'm Alex Wolf. I'm editor-in-chief of Knicks site, The Strickland, which you can find at thestrick.land or at patreon.com/thestrickland now. And I'll also be writing about the Knicks for Clutch Points this season. He is Gavin Shaw, your favorite play-by-play broadcaster's favorite play-by-play broadcaster. And we are today going over Julius Randle, and I don't know how much more there is to say about Julius Randle, though we are certainly going to try to find ways to say more great things about him today. Obviously, we're coming off of, he's got two preseason games under his belt at this point, as we're previewing his 2021-22 season. His previous one, he looked every bit as great as he did for most of last season. And it certainly was a fantastic season. 24.1 points per game, 10.2 rebounds per game, 6 assists per game. It's been well noted that he is one of, I think, only 5 players in NBA history, including Nikola Jokic last year, to put up that stat line, joining the company of like Larry Bird. I think was Giannis on that list. I forget the exact list at this point. Probably should have looked it up before we recorded, but extremely elite company with that stat line. And he shot 45.6% from the field, 41.1% from three, and 81.1% from the free throw line. Not quite a 50-40-90, but certainly a fantastic shooting line for a big. As a matter of fact, some other great numbers that he put up as a big. Among bigs, you know, because Cleaning the Glass, great website, they sort their players by categories that sort of don't conform to the traditional 5 position system. So they have a category called bigs, which is what Julius fits into according to their criteria. He was 97th percentile among bigs in assist percentage at 27%, 98th percentile in usage at 30.4%. And this is probably the most important part of all that, to contextualize those numbers, he was in the 88th percentile in assist to usage at 0.89, meaning that a lot of his usage was also dishing to teammates, which is a great sign. He was also in the 91st percentile in 3-point shooting at 41%, and in the 57th percentile in the mid-range at 43% among bigs. The one not great thing, and Gavin, I'll introduce these stats and then throw it to you. We can kind of have our first talking point here. The one not great thing with Julius's stats is that he was among bigs in the 16th percentile in finishing at the rim at 59%. Kind of, to me, underscores he plays more like a wing, but he's in the bigs category. But even among wings, 59% is not a fantastic finishing percentage at the rim. You want to, for someone as big and strong as Julius, you want to see ideally over 60%, even more ideally closer to 65% or so. If not even higher than that, if we're being honest. The other thing is that his shooting fouled percentage, meaning the percentage of plays that he was fouled on shots, was only in the 50th percentile among bigs as well, at 12.4%. So I'll throw this to you, Gavin. I think that one of the main things that could help Julius this year, I mean, there's only so many things to improve upon, right? When you turn into an all-star, a second team All-NBA player, whatever, you know, he obviously did so many things fantastic last year and led the Knicks back to relevance. But I think that if he could work on one thing this year, it would be either finishing stronger at the rim. And you know, that should be helped by some of his teammates, as we'll discuss in a minute, or getting better at drawing fouls around the rim. And either of those two things would help his finishing percentage, because obviously when you get fouled, it doesn't count as a field goal attempt anymore. And it boosts your shooting percentage in that way and gets you two easy looks at the line rather than, you know, a hard look that you don't finish at the rim. So what are your kind of thoughts on that with Julius's finishing? Like, where do you think he's going with that? Do you think that it is something that we'll see more of this year?
Yeah, I think it's going to be more frequent and more effective, to your point. I mean, there's the obvious that he has the spacing around him now, and that just makes it that much easier to drive. He will be getting head starts because instead of defenders, I mean, like we saw the whole Hawks series, it was four defenders not just locked in on him, but locked in on him from a starting point, right? It wasn't that they had to close out on him. And with someone like Kemba Walker, Evan Fournier, RJ Barrett creating an advantage for Julius Randle, that's a whole different ballgame. Now you have a defender sprinting out, trying to get a contest, and in those scenarios, he's going to have that running head start. And then just from a fatigue perspective, I think it's a whole new ballgame because he's not going to have nearly the same load that he had last season. And given that, I mean, whether it's less minutes, and I think even more importantly, less touches on a game-to-game basis, we're going to see a guy who has a giant uptick in terms of his efficiency and ability to finish.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the personnel is going to be the biggest thing, you know. And it's kind of a shame. Like, I know you mentioned it, and we've mentioned it the whole offseason, that Hawks series. Like, I it was an important distillation of things that the Knicks needed to improve upon, obviously. But it does sort of undercut, like, all the work that they put in last year. They just faced a team that had a really, really awesome scheme against them. So it's not like, you know, it's not like the Knicks' talent was – it's not like they were a talentless roster last year, let's put it that way. And that they, you know, that they made these enormous giganto improvements to take them from like nothing to something during this offseason. But I think they've just done such a better job of putting complementary guys around Julius that can do the important skill in the NBA right now, which is create. They had two non-creators at the one and two spots last year. With the same caveat, like, I feel like it's still kind of the case, however you consider RJ Barrett, if you consider him the two or the three on the floor, quote unquote. I usually consider him more the three. But, you know, however you want to say that, but Bullock and Peyton were not reliable creators. And in Peyton's case, he was not really reliable at anything, shooting, you know, finishing. Like, there wasn't too many redeeming qualities as far as he was concerned. Bullock at least was able to shoot the lights out, but I think that Julius's life is going to be made so much easier this year by the fact that they added Fournier and they added Kemba, who I mean, are just worlds better than the guys that they replaced in the starting lineup, as far as being able to create for themselves, being able to shoot off the dribble, being able to create for others, to get out of sticky situations. I mean, Kemba has, you know, when he's on, he has one of the probably top five or so handles in the league. That's kind of been his bread and butter throughout his entire career, dating back to college, is that, you know, the reason he's able to get by as a maybe 6 foot tall point guard in the NBA is that he just has the speed and the dribble package to get by pretty much anyone he wants to. And Fournier, even though he's not exactly a maestro with the ball in his hands, he certainly has the abilities we've seen throughout preseason to get out of a busted play and not just kind of get stranded on an island if things break down. I think that's really going to help Julius a lot. We'll talk about that more in a minute, though, as we continue going through some of this stuff. I've got a few more stats, too. But first, I just wanted to let everybody know that today's show is brought to you by Sweatblock. And, you know, I sweat a lot. I'm certainly not sweating Julius Randle this year, but I sweat about a lot of other situations. It's still been like 80 degrees out a lot of days, even though it's middle of October. We're like 2 weeks away from Halloween and it's still 80 degrees out. I hate climate change. And so do my sweat glands. So do my armpits, because I just keep sweating unless I use my sweat block, because sweat block, it's so easy to use. They come in little wipes. Almost looks like a little alcohol wipe or something in a little pack. You take it out, you dab your armpits with it before you go to bed, wake up, take a shower, or just go to the sink and wash off the excess off your underarms. And then you're all set. Your armpits are covered for up to 7 days from sweat coming out of them, I guess would be the way to put it. It's the ultimate antiperspirant. And it's doctor created, doctor recommended, and comes with the dry shirt guarantee. If Sweatblock doesn't keep you dry, you get your money back. I could tell you guys, I've been using it for about 2 months now, and I have zero desire to ask for a money back guarantee, because when I'm wearing Sweatblock, like, I don't sweat. I went to a 100-degree wedding and I was drenched from other parts of my body, but my pits stayed remarkably dry over the summer. So that's as great an endorsement as any. If you want to get some Sweatblock for yourself, get it today for 20% off at sweatblock.com with promo code LOCKEDON or at Amazon and CVS. All right, and we're back. As promised, I've got some more Julius Randle stats here as we continue our Julius Randle season preview. So we've done a little cleaning the glass love. Now I'm going to give B-Ball Index a little love. There are really so many great websites out there for stats for the NBA right now. So definitely check all these out if you're ever curious. Some of them require subscriptions, but I can tell you, for whatever they charge, I think Clean the Glass, it's like $60 a year or something. B-Ball Index is pretty similar. Totally worth it. These stats are really illuminating when you start looking at stuff. But via B-Ball Index, Julius scored out with a positional defensive versatility score of 61. I've been really curious about that number for a lot of the players on the Knicks. Basically, what it looks to capture is how versatile is a player at guarding other positions on the floor than just their own. And so they took time and basically logged how much time players spent guarding different positions, and then compiled it into percentages, and then used those percentages to come up with a score. And the ideal here is you want to get 100, and 100 would imply that you spend 20% guarding every single position on the floor. Obviously nobody gets 100. That's just not, it's not reasonable. You know, positions exist for a reason. Different size guys guard guys of like sizes because it makes sense. So nobody really is scoring 100. Some of the worst Knicks, as far as this metric is concerned, are the bigs. Especially the centers, like Mitchell Robinson and Nerlens Noel scored around a 50, for example. That's because they spend most of their time inside, and the Knicks deliberately keep those guys attached to the opposing team's center, because that's just how Tibbs' scheme works. He wants the big inside ready to receive any given ball handler when they come in, and, you know, be able to stop them at the rim. That's just how Tibbs prefers it. So, you know, their scores are generally low. Julius scored out at a 61, which is actually one of the higher scores among Knicks players. And I think that spoke pretty well to, when you looked at the data, he apparently spent around 40% of his time guarding fours, but then also spent around 15-17% of his time guarding fives and threes. And I think that was really on display last year. Julius did show it, you know, even when he made a switch onto a point guard or a shooting guard, he really showed that he has the ability to gobble anybody up. And his perimeter defense was so improved from 2019 to 20. So I think that speaks a lot to his versatility. I think that score is pretty accurate. He is also the only projected Knicks starter who finished in the 70th percentile and above in both offensive and defensive LeBron. LeBron is B-Ball Index's catch-all box score metric. I'm not a stats major here, but generally among the catch-all stats, I tend to prefer LeBron more so than others. It seems to verify the eye test better to me than a lot of them. So that's certainly encouraging that Julius finished so high in those. And then I figured I went and just looked at some of the better lineups that the Knicks put out. I did three-man lineups and put the qualifier that they had to have played at least 200 minutes together last year. And here's just a few ones that kind of caught my eye. And this will be something I'm gonna throw you a question based off this, Gavin, based off what I was seeing there. But so three lineups that kind of stood out to me. Randall, Derrick Rose, and RJ Barrett together had a plus 11.1 net rating in 404 minutes last year. Randall, RJ, and Quickly had a plus 11 in 356 minutes together last year. And Randall, Noel, and Quickly had a plus 10.6 net rating in 287 minutes together last year. My thought from this one, and this kind of goes with what I've been saying for a little while now, dating back to last year, is that I feel like maybe there's something to be said for having Randall find more playing time with the bench unit sometimes and being able to sort of feast on the tail end of other teams' bench units, you know, like their time on the floor. And I think a really good way to do that would be to go back to the trend that Tibbs started last year, where there was I would say probably a stretch of about a month, and it might have even carried into the playoffs, where he was actually making Julius the first sub off the floor for a while and bringing Obi Toppin in as the first guy off the bench. And then Julius would come back in early in the second quarter after Toppin had played, you know, five, six, 7 minutes. And then be able, you know, Julius would be fresh to be able to finish out the entire second quarter, basically. And they also did the same thing with the second half as well, having him come out early in the third quarter and then come back in early in the fourth, play a little bit of time with that bench backcourt and, you know, feast a little bit on the opposing team's reserves. So I don't know. I think that's going to be one of those just like little things that could help Julius be even better this year. I just thought that was such a great strategy once Tibbs employed that last year. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm open to it. I think there's certainly an element of it, of just overwhelming a team for a stretch and that being able to swing games. We see the Brooklyn Nets have that ability with what they did last year, where they'd pull James Harden early and then bring him back in, to your point on the Kyrie stuff. Maybe that's less plausible this year, but that is neither here nor there. Yeah, I love those lineups last year. And I think Randall, I mean the double commonalities there were Randall and Barrett and Randall and Quickly. Like, I love Randall with like a high level shooting creative point guard. The good news for the Knicks now is they don't have to reach for the bench for that like they did last year. Now they actually have that guy as their starter and two of them in their backup lineup. So I think some of that relatively added efficiency was just a product of going from Elfrid Payton to Emmanuel Quickly, and didn't really say as much about Randall in and of himself, outside of the fact that he obviously benefited from better point guard play and specifically better shooting at that position. That being said, I do enjoy it as a concept. And I also like the idea of Obi getting some run with the starters, and the fact that, like, not that the bench also has some really smart passing and quick ball movement, but having like the extra shooting and playmaking that a Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier and RJ Barrett bring to the table, I think that brings out the best in Obi. We had a really interesting sequence. I think it was in the second preseason game, I want to say, where everyone swung it around the perimeter. It led to Obi like nailing like a wide open top of the key three, or maybe I'm making it up that it went in, but he got a wide open top of the key three. And for Obi to get easy looks like that and to get chances to rim run and to get more chances in transition, obviously you can do that against backups too, but benefiting from playing with the starters, I think that's kind of fun. And it's sort of a way to keep him fully engaged. Not that that's been an issue for him, but like when he's only playing limited minutes. So I think it has multiple benefits.
Yeah, that's a good point too, you know, that you made a minute ago about the fact that the reason that some of those lineups did so well is probably just because of the fact that Randall was escaping the starting unit that he had to start games with. I mean, think about how many games started so terribly slow last year with Payton out there mostly. I mean, that was the big thing, where you'd have to just kind of endure those first 7 minutes or so where you had a non-passer, a non-finisher, and a non-shooter out on the floor who also had, you know, waning defensive effort any given night. I mean, it's just it kind of created this nightmare scenario where the Knicks had to, you know, how many games did they start off slow and end up having to, you know, dig themselves out of a hole from the first thing and spend the whole, you know, back half of the first quarter and second quarter and then whole back half of the third quarter and fourth quarter clawing out of a hole that was created from the first like 6 minutes of the game. Thankfully, now they're not going to have to deal with that anymore, hopefully, with the fact that, you know, we just mentioned there's all this new creation from Evan Fournier, from Kemba Walker in that starting lineup, a year better RJ, and hopefully a healthy Mitch, which, you know, it keeps, well, it didn't slip under the radar when we just did our preview the other day, and he might literally tonight be making his preseason debut if things go according to plan. So we'll see how it all works, but you know, he could potentially make a really huge difference too. And just, I mean, everything is lined up, I think, this year for Julius to have an opportunity to have positives in both the starting and bench unit. That said, I still do kind of like the idea of him being the first man out so that he can be the first man back in for the important part of games. So I guess we'll see if that's a strategy that Tibbs goes to again this year or not. But Gavin, maybe some people want to place some bets on Randle this year. I know last year he won Most Improved Player. Perhaps this year someone wants to place an MVP bet on him or something, or bet on some of his statistical averages. So is there a place where people can go if they want to place a bet like that?
You know, Alex, there is. We're back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back on for another football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this year. With a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. And don't forget to use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, we're back. Third and final segment on Julius Randle in this episode of Locked On Knicks. And Alex, we're going to do some rapid fire to finish off. So we can just trade off on these. I'm going to throw you the first one. Do you think for Julius Randle, is regression this year inevitable or unlikely?
Yeah, I wrote this question exactly like this because I think that there's been this weird thing where people either think that Randle regressing is an inevitability or something that there's no way that it's going to happen. And there hasn't really been much of a middle ground discussed with it. It just kind of seems like people have, you know, set down their flag on one side or the other. I kind of think that there's maybe a chance that he regresses a little bit. However, if I was still going to go in the inevitable or unlikely camp, I would say probably, I think that it's like, I think it's unlikely, but I think that it's possible that there's a small bit of it, but I kind of think that there's going to be regression NBA wide. And I've mentioned this a number of times, but like people have kind of been saying this about the Knicks in general too. Like, oh, the Knicks are going to regress big time. There's no way they can have, you know, 40% 3-point shooters on the roster again and blah, 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 this, that, the other. I don't necessarily know if that's true, first off, because I think that some of these guys are going to improve. They also added two near career 40% 3-point shooters, at least in recent years, in Kemba and Fournier. So, you know, I don't know why they wouldn't potentially shoot around 40%. But, you know, because of the pandemic restrictions being lifted as far as, you know, capacity in arenas and stuff, obviously I think there's going to be kind of a ripple effect around the league where all teams are going to kind of struggle a little bit shooting in a full arena versus an empty gym again. And so you'll probably see, I mean, I think that the numbers were inflated kind of league-wide last year, not just on the Knicks. So he might have a little regression due to that. However, I don't think it's like some inevitability that he's suddenly going to crash back down to earth as a 36% three-point shooter and a, you know, like a bad overall shooter again and stuff like that. And, you know, he's going to go back to making bad decisions and not passing the ball as well as he did last year. I think all those things are pretty well cemented. And we sort of saw that in that preseason game, the second one that he played in, where even the mid-range too, which I think a lot of people expected to regress even throughout last year, just kind of never did. And he kept taking and making all these really difficult mid-range shots that opened up a lot of things for the Knicks offense. And I don't really see that going away this year either, because it seems like, crowd or not, that mid-range shot is here to stay from all different angles, all different opportunities, whatever. So, yeah, I'm going with unlikely on that question. Gavin, here's something that I've been curious about. How will Randall I like rhymes. How will Randall handle less playmaking onus? And just a quick reminder, stats-wise, I think this stat is buried on NBA.com stats somewhere, but I know it off the top of my head what the rough number was. He was roughly the 90-somethingth percentile as a pick-and-roll role man with New Orleans in 2018-19, and that was with Elfrid Payton as his point guard. So with that in mind, how do you think he's going to handle less playmaking onus this year?
Really well. I think it's as easy to say that the degree of difficulty is just way, way down. He'll get a lot more like easy passes right around the rim. As we mentioned a couple pods ago, after the first preseason game, he like airmailed a wide open corner three because I think he couldn't even compute that he had that shot. And he was like, what? This is, you can get this in basketball. They're not going to guard me. I can just shoot it. And I think that will be increasingly common this year. And again, it's just that same trade-off with like less attempts, but more efficiency, including for him as a passer. Like, I just think like the types of passes he's going to be able to make are going to be so much more clean, and it'll just be like cross-court kick out, wide open shooter, bang three, versus like having to dribble into the lane against the double team and then throw it over his head to the opposite direction without looking, assuming Reggie Bullock will be in the spot that he thinks that he's in. And to Randall's credit, he was very good at that last year, but he will not have to replicate that feat because his teammates are so much better. All right, another good one for you, Alex, actually on the same topic that I just mentioned. Has Evan Fournier already proven he'll be a much better stylistic fit with Randall than Reggie Bullock? And you noted here parenthetically that is saying a lot, because Randall and Bullock were very, very good together a year ago.
Yeah, I think that Fournier has already proven that. I mean, for a lot of the reasons that we mentioned earlier, like, you know, the fact that Fournier is never going to get stranded on an island out at the three-point line, not knowing what to do with the ball and not being able to dribble while guarded by someone like a Trae Young, says a lot about, you know, how much of an upgrade he is. That's like the single biggest skill on offense that's going to make a big difference between those two, because obviously both of them are elite shooters. You know, Fournier and Bullock both shoot around 40% from three generally. But Fournier does it in such a different way. You know, he's able to take a few dribbles and find a shot that way. He's able to go from a standstill and figure something out. You know, he's able to take a pick and quickly, you know, get his way into the lane and make a quick decision about whether he wants to pass it to somebody or, you know, take a shot or get all the way to the rim. And he's able to do all those things effectively. He is like in the purest sense, a three-level scorer. I mean, I don't think that he's an elite creator for himself. Like, he's not going to be able to do the kind of stuff that Kemba or Julius can do if you just give them the ball at a standstill and ask them to create a shot. He's not quite on their level, but with, you know, a very simple action, like a little pick and roll, he's able to do pretty much anything you want him to do on the court, and he can score from any point on the court. And for that reason, I mean, we've already seen it in practice, you know, on some of the plays like last year, where, you know, the classic Bullock and Randall play last year was that Randall dribbles up towards Bullock at the three-point line. Bullock comes around, you know, Randall's outside hip, you know, whatever, if they're going on the towards the right side, he comes off of Randall's right hip. If they're going towards the left side, he comes off Randall's left hip and gets himself open at the three-point line. Randall catches Bullock's man on a screen as he's handing him the ball, and then Reggie shoots and makes it. And they've already tried that play a number of times with Fournier in the preseason, and the result has been like roughly the same if he just decides to shoot it. But then if the defender gets over Julius, if Julius's man, you know, recovers well and gets up on Fournier in that scenario and gets, you know, over the screen that way, then, you know, all of a sudden Fournier is not just like standing there with a deer in the headlights like Bullock would, and can make a decision of, okay, I'm going to put the ball on the floor now, and then starts to get by Julius's man, gets into the lane. And then all of a sudden Fournier's man panics too and tries to close in on Fournier also. Boom. Now he hits Julius out at the three-point line, who's just waiting there for a pass, and Julius gets a wide open 3-point attempt. So it's going to make his life so much easier having a guy that can, on offense, you know, we can debate his defense, you know, Fournier's versus Bullock's. I think Bullock's definitely a better defender, although maybe not by leagues and leagues worth. But, you know, you could debate the defense, but on offense, there's no doubt that he does everything that Bullock could do, plus does a lot of other things that are going to be really useful to Julius. So, yeah, he's definitely a better fit already. Here's a good one, Gavin. Based off the extension that Julius signed this offseason, which was 5 years, and I think the official final number was, or was it 4 years? I forget. Either way, it was like just over $100 million, like $115 million, and pays Julius like only a little more than what he's getting paid now, honestly, and nowhere near the maximum of around $35 million he could have commanded if he had chosen to. So my question to you is, does he have a chance to become the biggest value contract in the entire NBA?
I would say no. If you were talking about like every single contract,
let's say we rule out rookie contracts. Let's just say
that. Yeah. Well, no, I was going to say even without rookie contracts, like you look at someone like Kemba Walker, that's 2 years for $18 million. Like Randall would have to be like 2.5 times better than Kemba Walker for that to be true. And I think that maybe will be the case, but I think that's stretching it. I just think he's still making like a little too much money for that argument. But if you're talking about like maybe there's an over $80 million category, then hell yeah, then he's absolutely in that mix. Some other interesting ones I like: Dennis Schroeder at $5.9 million. Not that I think he's an amazing player, but for him that's a good deal. Victor Oladipo only making $2 million. I think it's unlikely that he smashes that. But if he somehow recovers and is really really good for Miami, that would be a pretty good one. But yeah, I think you almost have to look no further than Kemba Walker to find your answer there.
Yeah, I almost wonder if Kemba's like sort of an exception too as a buyout guy, because like if you look at it, it's almost like Kemba's getting paid like $42 million. It's just OKC is paying for the first 35. but yeah, no, that's definitely true as well. I mean, some of those circumstances come up that you just can't really control. And then, you know, you end up getting these guys on way better deals than you thought you could have ever gotten them on before. All right, next thing, we could both answer this, although we might have the same answer because it kind of came up earlier in the show, at least for me. What's the thing Julius most needs to improve upon?
That's a good question. I would say I don't want to say his decision making, because his decision making was largely good, but I think maybe his mastery of game management, which is sort of a LeBron quality, and everyone else is trying. Like LeBron gets like 100 out of 100 in that category, and everyone's aspiring to hit some high number on that LeBron scale. And I think last year from Julius in the playoffs, and I think he said as much in quotes since, he was pressing and he wasn't really thinking constructively in terms of like, what is the best way for me to contribute given how I'm being guarded? And I think he sort of regressed a little bit from a guy who made a lot of progress in that capacity and was controlling games at points last year to someone who lacked like a little bit of nuance and just sort of like went back to like bull in the china shop mode that he was earlier in his career. And that played right into the Hawks' hands. And it sort of made sense. It was the first time he was under that kind of pressure as a top guy in a playoff series on a team that we found in retrospect was a decent amount more talented than the Knicks. So I think just having that sense of like, I do not have to force the issue, especially this year because of who my teammates are. And I can just sort of let the game come to me, play within the flow of the game, and we will have a lot of success because I'm a very talented player with very good teammates.
That was actually a different answer than I was going to say. So that's good. Actually, I was going to say, I think it's his finishing. I think he needs to work on, like, for all the great things he did last year, I still think that around the rim, you know, occasionally he would power through, but the fact that he plays, I think, intentionally for the long-term health of his legs, playing the amount of minutes that he does, I think he intentionally plays below the rim quite a bit. But sometimes that results in him kind of taking these, I won't call them weak, because, you know, you can't put weak and Julius Randle in the same sentence, but these sort of lackluster attempts at the rim where he was going up and, you know, not really trying to create the amount of space that he's capable of creating. And also at the same time, you know, like you could go about it one of two ways. If you're Julius Randle, you can either go at it with power and gusto and try to just kind of bowl your way in for a finish, or you can, you know, play it more like a guard or a wing and sort of try to sell the contact more, and get a foul out of it. And, but, you know, because you're Julius Randle and you're strong and have good body control, you know, you can still try to finish through it. I think he's got to work on that this year. Hopefully the extra amount of space that he's afforded will mean that he'll get more opportunities to just do that against one defender rather than like two, like he did last year, which I think resulted in some of his attempts getting blocked and stuff like that. And guys not having to be as aggressive in their defense because he was just smothered. So we'll see how that all goes. But I think the finishing is the big thing for me, as was sort of evidenced by that, the stat that I put up earlier, that he's like in the 16th percentile as far as finishing at the rim amongst other bigs. So I think he could definitely work on that. Real quick, Gavin, what's if you're going to set a stat line for Julius this year, let's just say points, rebounds, assists, and like rough shooting percentages. What do you think it's going to be?
I will say 22-9-5 on 49% from the field, 38% from three, 80% foul shooting.
I'm going to say 22-11 and 5.5. That's rebounds and assists for those last two. And then I'll say 47.5% from the field, 39.5% from three, and like 83% from the free throw line. I think he's going to have improvements in everything but 3-point shooting, which will speak a lot to hopefully him getting better with finishing around the rim. And then final question, Gavin, then we can wrap up this Julius Randle season preview. We've asked this one for a lot of the players. I think it's maybe the most difficult for Randle, despite the fact that he's like the best player. So I guess in theory, this should be easy, but I think it's just because he's the best player, this becomes a difficult question. What constitutes a successful season for Julius Randle in 2021-22?
Playoff success. I think it's pretty much that simple. Like we can't have a repeat of last year, and I don't think we will.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it too. I mean, the other thing is just not falling back into bad habits, proving that last year was real, you know, in the regular season, not, you know, not going back to his old ways of playing selfishly like he did in 2019-20, especially now that he has such a great supporting cast around him. And I think if the preseason has been any indication so far, and we'll see more tonight when they get into that final game of the preseason, you know, I don't think we have anything to worry about there. And then, yeah, just the playoff success, which hopefully will come with having the better teammates and everything around him. It'll make life easier and make it easier for him to have that success. But if he puts up another big stinker, he's going to start being, regardless of the circumstances around him, you know, maybe it could be that Kemba or Fournier doesn't play well, or that they're hurt or something, or anything else. No matter what, he's the superstar now. He's locked in as the star of the Knicks for the next, you know, 5-6 years. And, you know, that means that he's got to live up to these expectations now. And the onus of things is going to fall on him if the Knicks flop in the playoffs again. So I don't think it's going to be a big deal either. I think he's going to play plenty well. I think even if the Knicks are a first round exit again this year, I think that they're going to take whatever team they face to a hard, you know, 6 or 7 games. And, you know, it'll be a series. And as long as they do at least that and don't kind of go out in sad fashion like they did last year, I think that you could easily call this season a success for Julius Randle, even without huge improvements across the board or anything like that. But anyway, I think that's about it. That's all we wanted to discuss about Julius Randle in this episode. We hope you all enjoyed. And we will be back with a preseason Game 4 recap tomorrow. And then we'll have some great content for you guys coming up next week. We have a really fun crossover that we're going to do with Knicks Film School that we're recording on Sunday and is going to go out on Monday. So keep your ears out for that. As well as we were going to have a guest for this episode, but we had to reschedule. So we're going to do another crossover with another very big Knicks content creator coming up next week as well. So Got lots of really good stuff coming up, even before the regular season, which of course starts on Wednesday. So, as always, thanks for listening to Locked On Knicks. We will talk to you all soon. Peace out.